I'm John Batchelor. This is the John Batchelor Show, a time machine. A time machine that can take us back to 77,000 BC years ago, approximately, and include information about Homo sapiens as our hominins spread and gain knowledge, and also created what we'd have to say is evidence of cognition, greater cognition for all skill sets. A time machine. It's called Sabutu Cave. It is in South Africa, towards the east of the country. And Michael Balter, who writes on archaeology for Science Magazine and Science Now, takes us into Sabutu Cave, and the archaeologist who is reaching her retirement, and what she has achieved these last years, because the site is only a little more than a decade old, and what it holds for the future. Michael, a very good evening to you. Sabutu Cave, there's a wonderful photograph accompanying your piece in Science Magazine, which shows a large open space and then the excavation in the middle of it. So as I understand it, the reason this space, this cave, is so attractive is that it was the housing development for tens of thousands of years. Good evening, Michael.
Good evening.
And in housing development, it had hominins in it, Homo sapiens. What have we learned so far, because they're just beginning the dig, of the hominids who lived in it?
Well, let me give you just a little bit of background. Sabutu, as you say, is a cave, or more properly a rock shelter. It's kind of a partial cave, which is perched fairly high up on a cliff above the Tongati River. The Tongati River is just a little bit north of Durban in the east of South Africa, and it runs into the Indian Ocean. To reach the site, you have to drive down a dusty road. You've got to ford a river, walk through some tick-infested brush. So Lynn Wadley, the head archaeologist, told me to be sure to put my insect repellent on, which I certainly did. And then you scrambled up a fairly steep ledge, or a fairly steep slope with loose rocks, and you wind up on this very broad rock shelf. Now, the reason that I mention how you get there, and I visited the site last March during the latter half of Lynn Wadley's excavations there, is that this is how the physical layout of the place would have been about the same 50, 60, 70,000 years ago or older that it was frequented by modern humans. And so it was some sort of a special place for them. The site was actually discovered back in the 1980s by another archaeologist who was actually interested in a later period, something called the Later Stone Age, which is about 40,000 years and later. And he was very disappointed to find that there wasn't any later Stone Age there, but that there was only Middle Stone Age. And Middle Stone Age generally goes from about 300,000 years ago to about 40,000 years ago. But this was Lynn Wadley's specialty, so when she heard that there was Middle Stone Age occupation there and Middle Stone Age frequentations by modern humans, she was all gung-ho to start digging the site, which she began doing in 1998. What we can say about the Middle Stone Age, or let's call it the MSA for short, is that this was probably the most formative period of time in the cultural evolution of our species, Homo sapiens. So Homo sapiens appears in Africa roughly 200,000 years ago, and the very earliest modern humans physically look a lot like us. They're a little bit more robust and sturdy and stocky than we are in general, but they pretty much look like us in most general characteristics. But their behavior was not immediately modern in the sense of engaging in symbolic activity, engaging art, making complex tools, and so forth. It took some time for a cultural evolution to begin. And that really starts to kick in probably about 100,000 years ago. So the great thing at Sabutu is that in the various so-called stratigraphic layers that archaeologists have dug there, a very, very well-preserved site, you find all of the sort of signatures of these modern human behaviors and this kind of cultural advancement. So you begin to find fancier and fancier stone tools. You begin to find examples of personal ornamentation, such as shell beads that appear to have been pierced and then strung together. You find very finely made bone tools. You find ochre spread all over the place, which could have had either symbolic or utilitarian purposes. And you find arrowheads, which apparently are signs of the earliest bow and arrow technology ever discovered, which ranges in about 64,000 years ago.
What I especially was attracted to was the idea of complex cognition, because it centers on, you've mentioned the arrows, but it also centers on snares and traps for small animals. So what we have here is the developing trapper culture as well as hunters. Is that correct, Michael?
That's absolutely right. Now, the evidence for snares and traps is circumstantial, but nevertheless persuasive to a lot of people, other archaeologists that I talk to about it. Basically, snares and traps, which are going to be made out of pieces of wood, they're going to be made out of animal hides, they're going to be made out of various netting and so forth. I'm not a trapper myself, so I'm speaking not for first-hand experience, but these things do not preserve in the archaeological record. We're talking about a site that begins about 38,000 years ago and possibly goes back as early as 100,000 years ago. They haven't dug the entire site, so they're not at the bottom. So the actual snares and traps themselves do not preserve. They disintegrate. But what we can do is use what the archaeologists call archaeological inference, which is a form of reasoning, a sort of more indirect reasoning or circumstantial reasoning. And what you have there is a lot of animal bones, and you have a lot of animal bones of things like these little antelopes that are called the blue duiker, that's D-U-I-K-E-R. You've got something called the bush pig, which is very, very aggressive, and these are extremely difficult things to hunt. Even if you had bows and arrows then, they're moving so fast, and they're so elusive in the forests that are surrounding the site, that they're going to be very difficult to hunt. And nevertheless, their bones actually kind of dominate the animal bones that are found up at this site, which is way up on a cliff face. So as a result of those kind of analyses and looking at the age range of the animals that have been found, which tend to be younger animals, these are all indicative, at least indirectly, that they must have been caught using snares and traps. And there are ethnographic parallels. In very recent history, tribes living in the Kalahari have caught very similar animals in very, very similar ways. So the evidence is circumstantial, but nevertheless convincing to a lot of people.
You mentioned Lynn Wadley, who is 64 years old and passing on the dig to a younger team. However, in her very careful use of the site, she has not plunged ahead with an exploratory hole to go all the way down to the bottom. Instead, she's approached it in a layered approach that has only put her 3 to 8 meters into the artifacts. That's very patient. How far down is she now? Is there an estimate of how far back she's gotten, Michael?
Well, in meters, she's gone about 3 meters into what is an 8-meter deep kind of mound of human debris, basically very densely packed human debris that is piled up on this ledge. It's quite fantastic to see. You arrive at the ledge and you think you're done, and then you've got to climb up to the top of the hill that's 8 meters thick. That's roughly 25 yards or something, or 25 feet rather, and this is all deposited by human activity. It's basically kind of people leaving their debris, leaving their garbage, although in a very, very organized way. In terms of actual time, what they use is something called optically stimulated luminescence dating that relies upon quartz grains that are found in the site, basically little pieces of sand, which contain a signal of how long ago it's been since they were exposed to sunlight. And so-called OSL daters are able to get that signal out and make estimates about how old the site is. So using these OSL measurements, we know that the top of the MSA, or Middle Stone Age occupations, were about 38,000 years old. And Lynn has gotten down to sediments or layers that are about 77,000 years old. But given that she's less than halfway into this hill, halfway down into it, she thinks that the site must be at least 100,000 years old. Now, when I was there, I pointed down to the bottom of that hill, and I said, Lynn, don't you ever get tempted to just start digging down there, put it in a little hole or what the archaeologists call a test pit, and look and see what's at those 100,000-year-old layers. And she just laughed and said that another archaeologist that she knows had urged her to do that, but she didn't want to because she didn't feel that she would be able to make sense of what she had found, that she would not be able to connect it or relate it to what she has found already. So not only is she incredibly patient, but she's not going to be the one who's going to be getting down to those bottom layers. Nicholas Konard, an archaeologist at the University of Tübingen in Germany, is going to be taking over the dig from her starting next year. And he will, with luck, be the one who will get down to the bottom of things.
I'm speaking with Michael Balter of Science Magazine. The arrowheads are a fascination, especially the evidence that how they attached them, made arrows out of them. But I'm most attracted, Michael, I don't know why, perhaps because it's so modern, of the evidences of bedding. You write of swatches of bedding made of sedges and grass. And in that bedding, they found evidence that they dined in on Sunday morning reading the papers.
Yes. There's a lot of animal bones in that bedding, and Lynn refers to those, I quote her in my article, as they're eating breakfast in bed. It's interesting because it's one thing to have evidence that there's grasses and sedges there, and it's another thing to be able to sort of conclude that they were used for bedding. Now, those conclusions are based on work, unfortunately, in my article for Science. I didn't have room to really get into details on this. But the work on the bedding was led by Paul Goldberg, who's an archaeologist at Boston University. And Paul Goldberg and his colleagues, what they basically do is they take kind of sections out of the layers that are being excavated, very small sections. They embed them in resins or other materials that keep them stabilized, and then they look at them under the microscope. And by doing that, they can sort of see how the sedges and grass have been layered in such a way that they have been deliberately kind of put down and then kind of trampled down or compressed by the layers that are above them. And in that way, they've come up with the conclusion that this was definitely used for bedding. There's also a great deal of evidence of fires, of hearths, you know, basically open fireplaces, some quite large, which also include animal bones, and make it very clear that this was a site where people, they did not live there year-round. They were hunter-gatherers, and so this kind of sedentary behavior did not start until really quite a bit later. But they did, you know, probably spend seasonally, maybe 2 or 3 weeks or something like that there during certain times of the year, probably in the spring.
Michael, your article does not mention, but it's complex cognition. Is there any evidence of artwork or artifacts in the area? It's a very large space, 55 meters by 19 meters.
Yes. There's no nothing that we would call art in the sense of cave art or anything like that. You may know that there's a site way over on the other side of South Africa, or at the tip of South Africa in the Cape region, called Blombos, where pieces of ochre etched with abstract designs have been found, dated to as early as 75,000 years ago, possibly even earlier. And a lot of archaeologists think that this might be the earliest art, although others are a little bit more cautious and are reluctant to call it art. But perhaps it does seem to indicate evidence of symbolic activity, symbolic thinking, possibly even indirect evidence of language. At Sobudu, what you have is you have evidence for these personal ornaments that I mentioned earlier. And personal ornaments can be considered a type of artistic activity, wearing a necklace, wearing a bracelet. The people who do this are considered to be artisans. So it could be considered an early type of artistic activity, but at the very least, it's an example of symbolic behavior. When we wear clothing, when we decorate our bodies, either paint them or put jewelry on them, if we wear a New York Yankees hat or a Los Angeles Dodgers hat, we're symbolically identifying ourselves with certain tribes, with certain regions, or perhaps expressing something about ourselves individually and personally. And when we do that, that is definitely considered to be symbolic behavior.
Michael Balter, writing for Science and Science Magazine. The Sobutu Cave of South Africa. The dig continues next year, perhaps as old as 77,000 years ago. It's a pleasure to consider that the Red Sox and the Yankees disputed even that far back. I'm John Batchelor. This is the John Batchelor Show.